This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, a lesson in your dictionary.
The dictionary in Mac OS X is one of those real hidden gems. It's something that more people should use because it's a very powerful system, and it's right there. It's bundled on every Mac.
Chris Finn tells you the power inside your Mac's built-in dictionary. Also coming up, we look at entry-level digital SLR cameras.
All entry-level DSLR cameras that I've come across from Canon, from Nikon, from Pentax, they all take very, very good photographs. This is mature technology these days.
James Ellerbeck reviews two great low-price digital cameras that will move you to the next level in digital photography. All that in Q&A with Trevor Middleton on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello again, everyone. I'm your host, Brad Gibson. Well, the buzz of the iPhone 3G is now history, and it's time to return to a little normalcy around here on Mac Format This Week. Let's get back to what we're best at, showing you neat little things you can do with your Mac, reviewing products, and answering your questions. And I can't think of a better way to start than to feature a great two-page how-to from the August issue on your dictionary. Yes, you may not realize it, but a great built-in dictionary lives inside Mac OS X, and it really doesn't get the attention it deserves, despite it being extremely powerful in so many ways. Mac Format's Chris Finn joins us now from the Mac Format newsroom to share with us some great tips on how you can use the dictionary to its ultimate. Chris, thanks for being with us again.
Hi there, Brad.
Tell us more about the dictionary app and its capabilities.
Yeah, it's a really good little thing. There's just a big database living inside the Mac that you can use to access. And it's a dictionary in essence, which sounds quite dull, but it's actually really powerful. Mm-hmm. So you've got the dictionary, you've got a thesaurus in there as well for checking up synonyms. You've got an Apple jargon dictionary as well in 10.5. And you've even in 10.5 got access to Wikipedia. So you don't even have to open up a web browser. You can access Wikipedia straight from within the dictionary application. And the main way that most people do this, I guess, is to actually launch the dictionary application, which is in your apps folder. You double-click on it, and there it's there. You can search for stuff. Everything within the dictionary is hyperlinked. It's all clickable links. You can click on a word if you don't understand that, and it'll take you to the definition page for that, forward and back, so you can get back through your list of stuff. And it's a really handy way of checking definitions, looking up synonyms, and just generally getting to grips with the language. And it's not just a straight dictionary. It's a bit of a sort of encyclopedia as well, not just because Wikipedia is in there as well, but because some of the entries actually have images associated with them, and you can click on the images to make them bigger as well. So it's a really handy research tool.
Yeah, the dictionary has really changed over iterations of the OS as we've moved through the years. And the thing I think that people really think that you use the dictionary for the most is in Office and in Firefox and web browsers and things. But it's got so much more capability. I mean, what other ways can we use the dictionary?
One of the easy ways to do it is through the services menu. And that's another little, a great little tip, because people tend to forget about the services menu. If you go into any application menu, so if you're in preview, let's say you go to the bit that says preview. If you're in Safari, go to the bit that says Safari. Drop that down. There's a fly-out menu there called Services, and a bunch of applications that you've installed, and the list really grows when you've installed third-party apps, put little helper things in there. And if you've been using your Mac for a few years, that'll be stuffed full of really, really useful things you can do, and useful ways of making your apps all sort of work together. And what you can do is you can highlight a word, go into the services menu, whichever application you're in, and do look up in dictionary, and it will fire up dictionary and it will show you that word. However, my favourite way of doing this is not to actually launch the dictionary app, because that takes time and it's a bit mucky, and I don't like having applications open that I don't need to. Mm-hmm. So what you can do, if you go into the preferences for dictionary, you can switch the preferences. So rather than actually launching dictionary app, it will pop up this little dictionary panel, which is a really handy, neat way of getting word definitions. So let's say you're typing something in TextEdit. If you select that word, right click on it, or hold down the control key and click if you're only a single button mouse, there'll be a lookup in dictionary entry from the contextual menu that pops up. Select that, and this little floating window will pop up with the definition of the word. What's even better is you can then use a little drop-down menu at the bottom of that to switch it to a thesaurus. So if you're writing something and you've used the same word twice, or you need a little bit of inspiration, or you just think your writing needs a little bit more sparkle, you can use the thesaurus to come up with a different word for your for what you're writing. It's a really quick and easy way of just polishing up your writing.
And it's also really quick the way you just described it, setting up the preferences and then using the widget. I mean, it's much faster. It gives you faster access to synonyms and things like that, too.
Sure thing. I mean, you only have to set up the preferences once, and once you've switched that once you've set that preference, that's throughout your entire system. So it's really easy to do. And bear in mind, this is a system level resource as well. So pretty much any app, and there's a big proviso there, but pretty much any app that will work with, if it uses the OS's built-in text engine, that will work with it. The main offender is Microsoft with Office, which has its own dictionary thesaurus system built into it, so you can't use this system, unfortunately, with Office. But if you're using anything else, and I use either Nicest Writer or Scrivener when I'm writing, it will work just fine. And remember, you've got other things as well. You've got the dictionary widget,
right,
which gives you access to your synonyms as well, and there's even a little trick up the sleeve of the widget. So if you enter a word, and then you'll see that when your definition comes up, there's a little semicircle at the left with the first letter of that word that you entered highlighted.
Oh yeah, that's right, I see it, yeah.
Yeah, click on that and it will show you other words, or other phrases even, that begin with what you just entered in. So it's a really quick way of mastering idiom as well, and getting some good colloquialisms in use.
Now, when we think of using the dictionary, you think of checking your spelling, but there are other ways to check your spelling too, right?
That's right. And in fact, the Mac has a really good built-in spelling engine, which again is accessible from everything with the exception of Microsoft Office and Firefox, and a couple of others as well. But those are the big two that people will tend to come into contact with. Now, what that means is that even if you're typing in a web form in Safari, you can be using the OS's built-in spell check to make sure that you're not making any mistakes.
Right.
Which might not sound all that important, but if you're using a webmail client, say, that doesn't have its own spell check engine, you can make sure that none of the emails you're sending out have really bad sort of high school glaring errors in them. The other thing you should be doing is making sure that your dictionary is set to British English if you're in the UK, or American English if you're in the US, or whichever particular variant of the English you're using. If you're in the UK, in pretty much any app that you have on your Mac, let's say TextEdit because it's quite easy, or maybe Mail, or maybe Safari, go to the Edit menu, mm-hmm. choose Spelling, and then Show Spelling, or in Leopard, Show Spelling and Grammar, and you'll get the spelling control panel coming up. And from within there, you can drop the menu down. It will say English by default. You can drop that down to British English, and when you spell colour with a U, it won't be marked as a mistake anymore, which is a really handy thing to do. And from there on, any application that you're using, let's say it's Safari, make sure the check spelling as you type option is checked from that edit spelling menu, and you can be typing away. Any mistakes you make will be underlined with a dotted red line. You can right click on it or control click on it and pick the correct spelling from that list.
Right, so it's universal then across all applications, those changes you've made.
Absolutely. And remember as well that because it's a centralized spell check engine, my surname is Finn, which is spelled P-H-I-N, which is an odd spelling for a surname. It's a weird surname. But if I write that down once I right click on it and choose Learn Spelling in, let's say, an email I'm writing in Safari, from then on in, every application that's aware of the dictionary in OS X, and as I say, that's pretty much everything apart from Office and Firefox, will know how my surname is spelled, and it will know not to mark it as a mistake from there on in. It works for everything that you teach the dictionary, things like Mac format, or I've taught my dictionary on my Mac, so that it knows that from there on in.
Very cool, very powerful. Okay, you really can't talk enough about the dictionary, because I don't think a lot of people realize, Chris, the dictionary goes across so many applications, and because it's kind of hidden in the background, it can be easily overlooked and forgotten. And I often find myself looking up a word in the dictionary on Google instead of realizing and I've forgotten that you can actually do it within macOS X. It's really easily overlooked.
That's right. And remember as well that if you're doing it in Google, you have to retype the word.
Exactly.
You're giving yourself more work, whereas if you're doing it in TextEdit or whatever, you just right-click on the word and everything's there. You can check it, and it's a much, much neater system. And it's one of those things I think people should have really explore, because it's a fantastic little application. And as I say, everything's hyperlinked, so you can explore and explore and explore, and you can really get a good feel for the language.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for giving us some real good tips on using the macOS X dictionary.
My pleasure, Brad, as always.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format Magazine. His two-page how-to entitled Master macOS X's Dictionary is on page 46 in the August issue. One One of the great things about Mac Format Magazine is the reviews, and James Ellerbeck oversees those reviews, and there are 20 of them, 7 software and 13 hardware in the August issue. He is a busy man, but he joins us right now from the Mac Format newsroom to go over a number of different products today. Hello, James.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
Very good. I know you're quite busy, so we'll get right to it. The first one we're going to cover, and actually the first two we're going to cover, are digital SLR cameras, entry-level cameras. And I think that this is really great for those out there that are thinking about moving up to an entry-level DSLR that really has some great features. And let's begin with the Olympus E420. It's a strong entry-level DSLR from Olympus that's small, but in your test, it really performed well, right?
It did perform really well. I'm looking for a small, lightweight camera to take on some travels that I'm doing at the end of the year. So this one particularly interested me because it's very compact, but fast to use. It's got a very fast focusing mechanism, which has been overhauled since the predecessor, the E410. It's a really nice sort of entry-level DSLR because it has some really good touchy-feely, simple methods of taking a great shot.
Now, in your review, you said that most DSLRs over 300 pounds, that all of them take pretty good pictures. So what makes this Olympus different and better?
It's very fast at focusing, very good white balance. The whole white balance system has been overhauled. Mm-hmm. I liked using it to take shots of people sort of on the fly. It's as fast as any digital compact I've used. So you can just sort of, you can whip it out and take a fast shot of people.
Right, so really compact and lightweight.
Yeah, compact, lightweight, good build quality. I used to use the OM10 back in the days of film, and it's got a lot of those good qualities. A strong build, very well laid out, buttons easy to play around with. It's got the hot shoe for a flash. It's got very clear laid out menu system. It's 10 megapixels, and it took great shots on the fly.
Yeah, 10 megapixels, 10.2 to be exact, a great camera. But unfortunately, you thought that it didn't offer image stabilization, which was one of the problems.
Well, a lot of these entry-level DSLR cameras, they have to give the casual user good shots quickly. Some models do it by offering image stabilization, which means that even with an unsteady hand and somebody who's not too familiar with their ISO ratings and framing a shot can take a pretty good picture. The Olympus camera doesn't have image stabilization. It doesn't offer any lenses that have image stabilization built into them. But what it does offer is an 11-point focusing mechanism that takes different areas of the composition and contrasts them. And it's just very fast at the way it does that. So
right.
I could very quickly take shots with it. So it counterbalances the lack of image stabilization by giving a very fast focusing mechanism.
Okay, great. 4 out of 5 stars you gave it. You said this is a really great camera to consider for an entry-level model at 380 pounds. So a great camera all around.
Yeah, and a very good choice for somebody with perhaps smaller hands or somebody who wants a camera to take traveling with them just because it's so lightweight.
Okay, let's move on to the Pentax K200D. The body only is 426 pounds. It's a 10.2 megapixel camera, a lot like the Olympus. Tell us about this camera, and then we'll compare the two in a minute. What's great about this Pentax K200D?
It does have type of image stabilization feature called shake reduction. It locks the mirror so that there's less blurring if you're taking a shot from a tripod, a close-up perhaps. It's much bigger. It's got a steel body. It's a heavyweight camera. It's got a really nice scene mode button, so you can just flick between different scenes, and that gives you quite good confidence to take a range of different shots.
Yeah, you mentioned that it has it bridges manual and automatic modes by setting the aperture and the shutter speed for you, freeing you to focus, and that's a really great feature, isn't it?
That is a good feature because a lot of people aren't going to be au fait with the exact requirements for setting up the camera for different environments. So it's good to have a kind of halfway point between automatic and manual. The aperture and the shutter speed are set for you just by pressing one green button on top, and it frees you just to concentrate on the focusing and to play around and get comfortable with the camera. So it's quite a good confidence builder. I think that's quite a good point for a camera which is an entry-level DSLR, and it should be a confidence builder.
Okay, the positives here were easy to use, the tone, color, and exposure were all great, strong anti-shake feature, very strong body strength, you said, but the minuses were it might be a little bit too pricey for entry-level buyers, and it had a poor kit lens that came with it. So 4 out of 5 stars for the Pentax K200D. Let's compare the two, the Olympus E420 and this Pentax. Which one do you like overall?
I'm going to buy the Olympus because it's lightweight. It's got that very fast focusing mechanism, which I think more than counterbalances the lack of image stabilization. It was very friendly to use. And it just sentimentally, it reminded me of using the OM10, which is a legendary camera. It takes really nice shots. Both of them do. Well, all entry-level DSLR cameras that I've come across from Canon, from Nikon, from Pentax, from Kodak, from Olympus, they all take very, very good photographs. This is mature technology these days. But so it comes down to things like how comfortable you feel with the camera, how the type of shots you like to take. And for me, I take less framed shots with tripods, so I don't really need the way that the Pentax has been set up. I'd much prefer the Olympus just because it gives me a bit more freedom to move around, and when I go traveling with it, it'll take up a lot less space and a lot less weight.
Okay, great. Two great digital SLRs for entry level. You can't go wrong with either one, but as James said, he recommends, or he's going with and recommends, the Olympus E420 to begin with. All right, let's move on to our final product, and it's a software product. It's an audio converter called Audio Hub from Texpansion. It's version 1.04. It's a basic nuts and bolts audio converter that you wrote really works brilliantly. So give us an idea who needs Audio Hub.
I listen to loads of music on the internet. I post lots of music on the internet. I buy and sell records. So I have to deal with a lot of different file formats that people mm-hmm. prefer to post up to the internet. Mm-hmm. And if you download them to your Mac or you stream them, you need to have different, well, for example, real audio files. You need to have real player to play them back. And then you can't put real audio files onto your iPod. So you just get left with being able to hear the music that you're interested in perhaps buying, or but you can only listen to it on your Mac. But Audio Hub, what it does is you just drop in any of the files that you've downloaded, and it's got a wide variety of formats that it supports, and it will convert them to more common format. It gave me the value back just because it can take these real audio files, you can drop them in, you can instantly convert them to MP3. Now, you can do that with the latest paid-for version of Real Player, but Audio Hub supports a wide variety of formats, more than just the real audio files. It'll convert WAV files, FLAC files. It's just great for that.
You know what I really like about an audio converter like this, being a guy that does a lot of audio myself with podcasting, is that you need to have something that's simple to use for the type of guy that just wants to drag and drop, do a conversion really quickly, but also it's got the other bells and whistles kind of hidden behind the scene that are out of the way, but if you need them, they're there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can adjust the bit rate. You can tell it where you want to pop the files afterwards. You can give it sort of pre-configured settings. But just right out of the disk image, once it's installed, you can just drag files across and convert them. You don't need any training at all. And it's an instant admin tool for anybody who listens to or plays around with music files on a Mac. And yeah, I just loved it because of that. There are more complicated software packages which do the same thing.
Right.
But it's just the simplicity of it. It just looks like a simple Cocoa-built OS X application that just doesn't try and take on any airs or graces. It's just simple, does what it wants to do, and it's cheap, and it works.
Two questions for you. Can you do batch conversion?
You can do batch conversion. You can batch convert different formats as well. So you can drop in, say, 10 different files which are different in different formats, and then you can output them all to the same format. You can't output lots of different files into lots of different formats, but you can convert lots of different formats into one type of format output.
All right, and my final question for you is, how fast does it convert? I mean, a lot of these converters don't have really good code inside in terms of doing the conversion. How fast is Audio Hub?
Yeah, really, really fast. I took a Real Audio radio show. It was an hour and 30-minute show. It was recorded at quite a low bit rate, but it didn't have to be that high for being able to play back quite clearly. And that took me, I think it was about 5 minutes to convert.
All right, so that's Audio Hub. Cheap as chips, simple to operate at £9 from Texpansion.com. You can get through it through our enhanced podcast link, a Mac Format 5 Choice Award. James, thanks so much for going over these three products. We really enjoy your reviews a lot.
You're welcome, anytime.
James Elibick is the product reviews manager at Mac Format Magazine. 20 reviews begin on page 81 in the August issue. Segment 4, always of our show, is Questions and Answers with Trevor Middleton. He joins us again to answer 3 great questions this week. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, Bradley. How are you?
I'm very good, sir. Hope you're doing well this summer. If you want to send questions to Trevor yourself, you can do that at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. Don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Let's get right into question 1 from Simon Foley of Bristol, Great Britain. He wrote, are there any suitable graphics cards for the G4 digital audio that I have that will be able to drive 2 monitors? Trevor.
Simon, simple answer, yes. That particular G4 tower has a 4x AGP graphics slot for which you can still buy a graphics card. The ATI Radeon 9600, for instance, will support a couple of DVI monitors, which is exactly what you want. Or, of course, if you have VGA flat panels, you'll need to buy the requisite DVI to VGA adapter. So, yes, perfectly possible, Simon. Back to you, Brad.
All right, question 2 is from Martin Warrens of Swindon. He writes, I'm looking to buy a new high-quality A3 Plus inkjet printer to produce high-quality graphic visuals like flat color Pantone colors, fine detail, as well as photos and illustrations. I've read loads of reviews of suitable equipment. However, everything I'm reading relates to photo quality, not graphic usage. Any suggestions?
Right, well, the question of using inkjets as a cheaper alternative to, say, chromoluminescent proofs is a much discussed one in the graphic design industry. Thankfully, there are solutions around that take the worry and the potential problems out of such a solution. A common answer is to use an A3 oversized inkjet in conjunction with a software rip, such as Behmi's PowerRip X for Mac. Essentially, a software rip, which stands for Raster Image Processor, by the way, replaces the manufacturer's printer driver with software that's capable of much more precise control over color, including CMYK, spot color matching, and so on. Now, Martin, it might be worth your while getting in touch with an Apple solution expert who specializes in print and publishing for more detailed advice. But in the meantime, I hope we've helped in a small way.
Yeah, and you know, the Behmi PowerRip, I've actually used that software product, and it is very powerful, and they've really got good support on it, too. So it's an excellent product.
It's very good indeed. Yes, distributed by AM Micro in this country, who are very, very knowledgeable about the product. And there is a demo version available as well.
All right, our final question comes from Robert Jones of Perth, Scotland. He wrote us, I've just bought a Western Digital MyBook World Edition 1 TB drive so I can wirelessly back up my MacBook Pro via a Netgear router and Time Machine. But when I got it home, I realized it was configured for PCs running Windows. Trevor, can I reformat this drive?
Okay, well, you can use the drive on a Mac. Western Digital's website say that the MyBook World Edition is Mac compatible, but that it uses, and I quote, a proprietary file system and cannot be reformatted. They also said that it's intended to be accessed using the SMB network protocol, which those of us who use Macs on Windows Network will know all about. Time Machine, however, needs to have a hard disk formatted in a specific, different way, and Western Digital does make a range of drives specifically marketed as Mac and Time Machine compatible. So if you're using the drive on a network and you're not bothered about Time Machine, hold on to it. If you are bothered about Time Machine, take the drive back and exchange it for one that will do exactly what you want it to.
All right, Trevor, thanks so much for all your help this time around. 3 great questions and 3 great answers. We'll see you again.
Thank you. See you next time.
You can send us your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format this week. My thanks to Chris Finn, James Ellerbeck, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakularopoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 4th of August. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.